This podcast is brought to you by Telegraph Local, telegraphlocal.com, the web's only real opinion-free breaking news platform. At Telegraph Local, our team reports and delivers real facts for real reporting. In this day and age, facts are extremely important. Facts matter. Real news matters. The only real place to find these facts is on telegraphlocal.com. So if you, like many, many, many others, are tired of the same misconstrued reality of the world and of the current aggressive political landscape, come on over to telegraphlocal.com. We'd love to have you. Read, comment, share. Telegraph Local, your opinion-free news headquarters. Hello, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome. Today is 7/22, bright and early at 10 a.m. in the middle of the country. Welcome to Politics Weekly special broadcast. It's a very special broadcast day because we have a very, very special guest joining us. A guest that, well, he's a household name. He doesn't really need any introduction because of who he is, but we'll do it anyway, well, because we need to. Michael Medved is host of the Michael Medved Show, a show that's been on the air for a long, long, long time. I know that my family has listened to him forever. It's actually syndicated on KTTH in Seattle. But more importantly, let's go over and above him just having a talk show. Mr. Medved's also a writer who's penned, last count, almost 24 books, all of them very well-known books. Medved's a movie critic who is still active to this day. He probably does 2 or 3 movies a week that he critiques, as well as countless movies in the past. He is a graduate of San Francisco State. He is a graduate of Yale University and also attended Yale Law School. So we have him coming on to join us in just a minute or two because we want to talk to him. We want to get some answers from him. We want to hear about his new book coming out. But we also have some pretty heavy topics. We're going to talk about the fall of the nuclear family in African-American communities and what it's done as a whole. And, you know, we've talked about numbers like this on this show in the past. The over 70% of households are lacking a father figure in African-American households. There's a 50% graduation rate among African-Americans with the education system. We're also going to go into the Democrat Party's leadership in major cities, their failure to lead their cities through a pandemic of violence and race issues, as well as the pandemic. And everyone wants to blame Donald Trump, but it's not Donald Trump's fault when you can't control your own city. There comes a time for personal accountability. When are you going to be the one that actually steps up to the plate, admits you screwed up, and move on in a manner that actually positively affects your community at large? There has been, just yesterday in Chicago alone, there was a shooting during a funeral memorial. I believe 14 were injured. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the upcoming presidential election, the polls, whether polls are trustworthy these days or if they're not. I for one, got to be honest with you, I don't trust them. You know, it was funny. Last election cycle in 2016, Trump was down by 3 points, but yet he won by millions of votes. And it's not whether or not you like Donald Trump. I'm not a huge Trump fan. I've said that many times on the show. I am was a Democrat for many years, pretty much my entire adult life, and I voted Democrat. I don't think this time I'm going to do that because I don't think he's getting a fair deal at all. I don't think in a second Joe Biden is leading Donald Trump by 10 points, I think the latest poll showed. I think that's an insane number. I think that number is very skewed. And I think it's something that we all need to be aware of. It's just not accurate. But in the meantime, let's get on to welcome our guest for the day, Michael Medved. Michael, are you there?
I certainly am. Glad to speak with you.
Hey, glad to speak with you. Look, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. I know that I've listened to you for years. My family has listened to you for years. We had your books in my home growing up. So you're very well known amongst my family and friends of family. And I know about, you know, 4 or 5 million other people get to hear your words of wisdom every single day on the Michael Medved Show on KTTH in Seattle. So thanks again for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners are going to love hearing what you have to say today.
I appreciate it. And it's Seattle and across the country on a bunch of stations. And people can find it at michaelmedved.com. That's just the shameless plug that's necessary. You understand these things.
The shame you can have, we'll have another plug for you about your new book coming out very soon here in a few minutes. But, you know, I know we had some scheduling issues, so I'm glad this finally came through for us. So I guess my first question to you is, and, you know, I know there's a lot that you agree and don't agree on, and that's why I was so eager to have you on, because I love hearing other people's opinions, because sometimes I'm wrong or sometimes our listeners may not hear it the correct way, and they may have a skewed perception of what how to think about the political climate right now, which I'm sure we can all agree is crazy. It's insane.
Yes, I certainly agree with that. Politics in America is toxic in a way that it doesn't need to be. And people say this all the time, that we're a divided nation and we aren't civil and we aren't constructive. It's never quite been like this, except, of course, at the time of the Civil War. I mean, it used to be comparing this to 1968. 1968 was horrible. But the difference was there were people who were really enthusiastic about one candidate or another in 1968. There were people who really did believe, as I did at the time, that Robert Kennedy, who was running for president, would make a real difference and take the country in the direction that, at the time, we thought it needed to go. Right now, I think the American people look at both of these candidates, and there really are only two of them, and Really? This is the best we've got? It's appalling. And I know there are polls that show that there is a large group of people who really do think President Trump is the greatest president we've ever had. But I think that's a very, very rapidly diminishing segment of the population. And I think that's simply an impossible case to make at this point.
I don't disagree, and I'll be honest with you. I until recently, was a Democrat. I've been a Democrat my entire life. I come from a traditional blue-collar Democrat family. But one of the turnoffs I've had this go-around is just seeing the lengths that I feel the Democrat Party has gone to try to gain control. I think the riots and looting are absurd and disgusting. I mean, it's caused more damage. I think that the rioting and looting has caused more damage to African-American families than Donald Trump ever has in just a few
Without question. And if President Trump pulls it out and wins this election, it will be because of the extreme left, because of the ongoing riots and the defund the police. Most Americans like the police and understand that our lives can only function. You literally could not function without a police department in your locality. Otherwise, you honestly are living a nightmare.
You can't have a society without police. I mean, no society would exist.
Correct. And this is why, by the way, and people should be aware of this. I just wrote a piece for USA Today that I think is supposed to be in the paper on Friday about Joe Biden's vice presidential choice. He really does need to choose Representative Val Demings of Florida, because she has a unique qualification to heal this painful breach that we have in the country right now between the black community and law enforcement. She was a cop for 27 years. She met her husband on the police force in Orlando. They've been married for 32 years. He was former chief of police in Orlando. She was former chief of police in Orlando. He was also former sheriff. So the fact that she is a black cop is absolutely crucial for stopping this nonsense that we hear out there that somehow the black people are oppressed by police departments. Actually, police departments and decent policing and responsible policing are essential to living in any kind of urban neighborhood, but particularly for the black community, it's been so overwhelmingly victimized by violent crime.
I agree. I think that, I'm a math guy. I like numbers. I think numbers are very, very true, and they paint a picture that some people may not want to hear sometimes, but numbers don't lie. I think the FBI statistics last year showed 9 armed African-Americans being shot and killed by police. Out of those, I think 7 were considered justified, and the other 2 weren't, and the cops were prosecuted. Now, those numbers may be 1 or 2 off, but if you think about that,
Just to correct you for a moment, you're talking about unarmed. If you talk about armed suspects, it's a larger number. It's about 250.
Armed suspects.
Yes, that includes armed suspects. What you're talking about is unarmed, because almost always when police encounter suspects, whether the suspects are white or black or Latino, whatever they are, it's okay. Nothing bad is going to happen unless the suspect is armed. And when the suspect is armed, of course, police are right to fear for their lives.
I agree. But even with those numbers, it fails to show that the police are driving around in cruisers with trigger happy, 9mm on their side waiting to shoot African Americans. It's just not true.
It is absolutely not true. I mean, one of the things, and I've written about this in my book Right Turns, which is about how I went from being a punk liberal activist to being a lovable conservative curmudgeon. And in Right Turns, I talk about this job that I got after I had been working in politics as a speechwriter. It was after law school. And I got a job working for a consortium of police departments in the Bay Area in California, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, and Richmond, California police departments, doing minority recruiting. And it was a fascinating job for 2 years. But I got to know a lot of black cops. And these are some of the finest people in America. It's one of the reasons I'm so enthusiastic about Congresswoman Demings. And frankly, if you talk to black cops about the pain that they feel right now about police being the target when actually it's these criminal gangs and the recidivism. I mean, the idea that you're going to help make neighborhoods safer by letting people out of jail who are there for hideous, violent crimes.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
This kind of stuff is nuts.
Yeah, I think that's what's helping Donald Trump. I think people, even conservative or even liberals, are seeing this and saying, hey, if we elect Joe Biden, is this what we're going to get for the next 8 years, 4 to 8 years of our life? And I think it scares the hell out of people.
I think you're entirely correct, and it's why Biden has to be unequivocal about a number of things. And the main one is that he is not anti-police. And if this election comes down to a referendum, how do you feel about policing? Do we need more support for our police, or do we need to undermine our police? The pro-police side will win, and it won't be close.
Well, to get Joe Biden to, my frustration with Biden, and I'm not totally against Joe Biden, but I have 2 things. He's been in public policy for over 40 years and has done nothing except passing his crime bill, which actually hurt the African-American community. And I feel like he's going to be a puppet. I've watched his talks or his platform, and I'm not impressed. There's nothing that impresses me about him. What's he going to do different that he hadn't had a chance to do different in his entire career?
Well, first of all, it's a different job being president and being U.S. senator. And I have all kinds of reservations about Joe Biden myself. The one thing that I think we're going to disagree on is the 1994 crime bill is not something that Joe Biden should apologize for, and it didn't hurt the black community. It helped the black community, and people should not believe the Bernie Sanders propaganda on this. Nothing has helped the black community in this country more than the historic decline in criminality and in violent crime that occurred in this country between 1995 and just 2 years ago. And it was because of tougher policing and longer sentencing and putting bad guys away. It used to be there was this American consensus for three strikes, you're out. That if you've done violent crime again and again and again, goodbye, you are not fit for civil society. And frankly, the hundreds of thousands, and it literally is hundreds of thousands, of black lives that matter, that have been saved because of better policing, is the great untold story of this election cycle. And it's a story that needs to be told.
Okay. So I guess we have a couple questions to answer here that we brought up before you came on. So I want to get those knocked out real quick. The fall of the nuclear family in African-American communities, do you agree or disagree that not having a nuclear family hurts children growing up? And do you feel as though there's some way to fix that, to address it? And if it's important to do so?
Yes and yes and yes. The difficulty is it's not just the African-American community. You now have it's over a third of children of non-black parents, if you count Latinos and whites who are similarly situated. But for white families, there are tons and tons and tons. And again, approaching a third of all babies who are born out of wedlock. And there is no doubt in the empirical data about what that means. That means that you have a child who comes into the world in an out-of-wedlock family who is less likely to succeed in school, more likely to do drugs, more likely to commit suicide, more likely to be involved in criminal behavior, less likely to succeed by any measure. And this is something that liberals, smart liberals, have understood for a long time. It's a woman named Isabel Sawhill at Brookings Institution who had a three-point anti-poverty program. And literally 99% of people who follow these three guidelines will not, after the age of 30, be in poverty. They will be out of poverty. They'll escape it. And the three guidelines are to graduate from high school. It's kind of basic. You're in trouble if you don't graduate from high school or get a GED. That's number one. Number two is to wait to have children until you're married. And yes, it works like magic. And number three is to go no more than 6 months unemployed. Now, if you do that, 99% of people who follow those guidelines are not going to be in poverty after age 30.
So in other words, the simple traditional values that I was raised on, and you know, I'm only 42, but at the same time, it seems like traditional values in the last 20 years have just disappeared. Like it's okay to not be married and have kids. And I don't know if I agree or disagree with that. I think two responsible adults should be able to make that choice. But at the same time, you're still going to have unmarried couples with kids. I mean, do you feel that way with long-term couples? If a couple's together 5 years and they just don't want to get married to have children? Or do you think that they should always be married?
It's not a question of what I think. It's a question of what the evidence shows, what the data show. And the data show that there is a big difference between raising children in a long-term partnership or raising children in a married couple. The point is that when you get married, you have a new default position that you've set. In other words, every time your computer goes back, it comes back to married. If you're not married, there is a constant question of decisions. What am I doing? And the point is that marriage is so normal. It's been so much a part of civilization for such a long time that you have.
Medved's call dropped. That stinks. So we have actually dropped Michael's call. We lost communication with Michael. Hopefully he joins us here soon in a second. But until that, let's go over some of the stuff he talked about. He brought up the traditional married family, about the mindset of being married and having those decisions taken away because your default programming comes back to being married. And I think she's spot on with that. You know, I know a lot of friends who have kids who are not married. I know a lot of friends who have kids who are married, but I also know a lot of friends who have kids that have recently gotten divorced. So I'm not sure if that whole being married mindset is really as strong as it used to be because, you know, let's face it, divorce in this country is at a and that's kind of scary if you look at the broad side of that. What if marriage rates go to 60 or 70 or divorce rates go to 60 or 70%? What happens then, or 80%? Or what if we wake up society one day and decide marriage just isn't necessary anymore to have a family? So I don't know. I like what he had to say, and he's actually back.
I think I'm back.
There you go. You are actually back. I'm not sure what happened there, but we lost you for a few seconds. But let's take that chance to move on for a little bit. So New York City, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, all having huge spikes in crime. They all happen to also be run by Democrats and have been for quite a long time. Do you feel that the Democrat Party leadership in these major cities has failed their constituents?
Yes, and they've been failing for a long time. I mean, I would relate this very much to the homeless issue, what is called the homeless issue, which is really an issue of mental illness and drug addiction and transience and just the breakdown of basically any sort of order at all. And I hesitate to use the term law and order because it has all kinds of pejorative associations with many people. But the truth of the matter is, if you are running a city where there are massive encampments of people who are down and outers, who can't take care of themselves, who are defecating in public and trashing our public parks, and then you are encouraging criminality. And sooner or later, it's going to soar. This is the whole essence of what James Q. Wilson at Harvard years ago called the broken windows effect. If you have a neighborhood where there's graffiti and broken windows and a lot of people in drug-induced stupors lying on the streets in their own filth, then it's an advertisement to the whole world that there is no order here. This is chaos. Anything goes. And the problem with Chicago and the killings in Chicago is I saw that last weekend they had a total of 60 shootings in Chicago, and they had picked up zero suspects. None.
They had 14 yesterday alone at a funeral procession.
Yeah, which is – well, they did pick up, I think, two or three suspects from that. But the problem is crime without consequences, of course, feeds more crime. So do I think that – the leadership of people like Lori Lightfoot or our mayor in Seattle, Jenny Durkin, or Mayor de Blasio in New York, we have a crop of mayors right now across the country that are about as pathetic as at any time that I can remember in a long life. And Eric Garcetti in L.A. may be the least embarrassing of them. But if you look around the country, I mean, everywhere. Walsh in Boston is also not entirely terrible. But the rest of these guys in New York and Chicago and Cleveland and San Francisco, heaven knows, and then Portland and Seattle, and I mean, forget about it.
It seems to me, I think what's frustrating is they're not blind. They're obviously mayors. They didn't get there by being ignorant, but they refuse to admit, hey, you know what, I've made some bad policy choices, and it's time for me to correct that. This is what we're going to do to fix the violence in our city. It seems to me, like, especially Chicago, like, she just doesn't care one way or the other. Like, if she stops crime, she's not going to get reelected. And it seems to me it should be the opposite. If you don't stop the crime, you're not going to get elected.
Ryan, I think you're entirely correct. And, look, it's basically, when you look at some of these anti-police protests, there is a crucial issue here, which is the right of individuals to be safe and secure in their own homes, the right of individuals to be able to go to work knowing I'm going to come home and not be killed, the right of kids to go to a playground and not be shot. And on this one, the police are not the problem. The police are the only solution to the problem. And again, I do know that the Biden campaign is thinking about this because right now he has actually formally called for more funding for police. And at the same time, he says, well, but we'll use some of those funds for new programs of social work, et cetera, et cetera. He's got to be unequivocal. No, defund the police, refund the police. And that's not refund, like give them money back. It's like create more levels of funding that are appropriate to the magnitude of the crisis we're facing.
I agree. So you have a new book coming out of the almost two dozen that you've written. And what's the name of that book? When's it coming out? And give us a brief run over what's going to be inside of those pages.
Sure. It's could hardly be more pertinent. It's coming out in paperback. And the paperback edition the book is called God's Hand on America. And it's part of a two-part series. The previous book was called The American Miracle. And these two books tell the story about Providence working in American history. And here, I'm not asking people to believe me or to believe any religious teacher. Just believe the people who have led this country, from George Washington through Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt, and, yes, even John Kennedy and Barack Obama. It has become increasingly obvious, it seems to me, to American leaders, that this country is different. It's not just an accident. It didn't just happen randomly. And God's Hand on America, actually, there's a large chapter about Dr. King and his life and ministry and his prophetic role. But the new book starts with the night of Lincoln's assassination, where a number of other truly crucial events occurred, and takes the course of American history and tries to understand, as I think all Americans should, what it is that a higher power has in mind. There's a quote that I love, and it's not from an American, it's from a German, Otto von Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor, who said, "It is a job of any great statesman to listen for God's footsteps in history and then to grab his coattails and hang on." I wish that President Trump would take that advice.
Yeah, I hear you. So one more thing before we get you off today. So I know that you are a movie critic. What is the last movie that you had a hand in giving your advice about?
Well, the last film that – I mean, I review Total. We do Medved Entertainment Minutes and five a week. So it's a lot of material. But the last film that I've been really enthusiastic about has been Greyhound with Tom Hanks, and which is a great World War II movie, and it's streaming everywhere on Apple TV Plus, and it's really worth seeing. It's based on a novel from 1955 by C.S. Forster, the same guy who wrote those Horatio Hornblower books that people love. And it's the story of a convoy in 1942, a convoy of American troops in 1942 and supplies to Britain, which is fighting for its life against the Nazis, obviously, and going through that mid-Atlantic area known as the Pit, and it was, where there are Nazi submarines just waiting to blow these ships to smithereens. It's an exciting film. It's beautifully done, and Tom Hanks wrote the screenplay and deserves an Oscar nomination for it.
I definitely plan on watching. I don't have Apple TV, but my girlfriend does, so I think we're going to have a movie night coming up because I love Tom Hanks. She loves Tom Hanks, and I think her favorite Tom Hanks film was one a few years ago where he played in the – he was a spy or just a businessman who was chosen to be a spy.
Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies. That was definitely my all-time favorite Hanks movie. He nails it.
There's so many. This one will, of course, recall his role in Saving Private Ryan, which I think is one of the great movies ever made. And the thing about Tom Hanks, people don't remember. Did you ever see any of that John Adams series on TV, the 7-part series?
Yeah, I've seen every single episode. Great series.
Yeah, Tom Hanks produced it.
I didn't know that.
If...
The
guy has really made some real contributions, and I think that John Adams series is one of them, and the new movie Greyhound is another.
Yeah, he's come a long way since the days of Big, hadn't he?
Yeah, man, Big was a pretty cool movie, too. The interesting thing about Greyhound is the novel that it's based on is called The Good Shepherd, and the character in the novel is deeply religious. He prays in the midst of battle. He prays over his food. He prays when he goes to bed. All of that is shown in the movie. And it is a very sympathetic to religious believers, and I think that people will find it refreshing.
Glad to hear it. Well, we are here today with the great Michael Medved. And, Michael, I can't say how much we appreciate you coming on and giving us some Medved knowledge. You can find him at michaelmedved.com, KPTH in Seattle, which is also syndicated throughout the country. On a daily, are you Monday through Friday, or are you 7 days a week?
Monday through Friday, yes, sir. We are on live, and people can just click on the internet and get it live. Chicago time, we're on from 2 to 5.
2 to 5 p.m. Central Time. Great. Well, thanks again for joining us. Hopefully we can have you on sometime in the future to talk about more of this political stuff as it gets a little more heated up over the next few months.
Look forward. Good luck with the podcast and everything else, Bart. And stay safe and secure and healthy.
Thanks, sir. Take care. So we had it. You heard it straight from the horse's mouth. The great Michael Medved, who is a legend in some circles, probably more than you would understand. And he has been around a long time. I loved what he had to say. I think it makes perfect sense. And there was a little bit of disagreement, and it went, I'm glad it's important. Something we don't have anymore is the ability to disagree and still get along and respect the other person. I think it's gone through the wayside. I think it's gone down the toilet. And if we want political peace to come back, that's got to be the first thing. I agree with what he had to say about the police right now are the only solution in these major cities that are Democrat held. And why in the world can't these Democrat mayors stand up and admit that they did something wrong and that they're going to fix it? Baffles me. It seems to me that I wouldn't want to vote for a mayor that offers an environment to where if I'm walking down the street one day, I may get shot and killed over $10 in my wallet, or just because some criminal feels like it, or maybe caught in the crossfire or in the wrong place at the wrong time. But anyway, that's all we have for today's special edition of Politics Weekly. We will be back on Friday, and also check us out on our new podcast, Catching Hell. Catching Hell is about serial killers throughout time and throughout the United States. We will be interviewing different authors on different days, and we start today at 3 p.m. Central Time, which we'll have our first author on. You can find the link to that podcast on telegraphlocal.com on the sidebar. You can also find the link to this podcast and article written about this podcast on telegraphlocal.com on the sidebar and also in the main content area. Until next time, guys, stay safe out there.